Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. Join Dave and his guests now as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, a big L.A. welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, and I should say from New York also, since Adrian's on the other side of the country.
Yes.
Coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on our 14 global platforms, and I'll just name a few of them because there's too many: iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, Mixcloud, Listen Notes, Blueberry, Player FM, Podcast.com, VOP Internet Radio, and Facebook Live. Yeah, I cheated. I named all of them. We have an exciting interview, that's a tough word to say, planned for you today with my lovely co-host Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space, 160,000 strong. And say hello, Adrian.
Hello.
And today, our guest could not make it because she got strep throat.
Ooh, not fun.
We don't want to wish that on our worst enemies, do we? So today's guest is Dave and Adrian, the Dave and Adrian show, the Adrian and Dave show.
Alphabetical.
And we'll be telling you, of course, alphabetical. We will be talking about the five biggest complaints the caregivers have, according to caregiving.com. I mean, I didn't write this stuff, but according to them, these are the five biggest mistakes the caregivers make. So before we do that,
the five biggest problems that they have. Complaints.
Yes. I mean, there's tons of
not mistakes.
That's
complaints.
True. Complaints. And maybe the mistakes are how they're handling the complaints, but
yes,
there are a lot more than five complaints that caregivers make.
Oh, yeah.
The list is long, and which one comes first, second, third, fourth, or fifth is completely subjective. But maybe next week we'll do like the next five. I don't know. Anyway, today I want to take this moment and thank last week's guest for coming on. And you can see that interview and all our interviews on Dave.com and all those other 14 platforms that I mentioned. Yeah, I was going to say so, but I'm not going to say so. I'm just going to say what I want to say. Because I went to VIP speaker training. What else do I need to say? Okay, well, let's just get started. How are you today, Adrian? Take your time. Think about
Hassled.
It before you answer.
It's been a crazy day with the the rain
because
here.
You're in New York. It's raining.
The rain is like
and
the tropics. It's,
and the United States, the United Nations is going crazy.
Yes.
And you're high humidity. So there are
police everywhere.
Everything
there are
that can go wrong in New York
everywhere.
Today is happening.
Huh?
I said everything that could go wrong in New York is happening today.
Today, it's a perfect storm. Yeah.
So if you were planning a trip to New York, don't come. Don't come today. Well, so let's start with the number one, the numero uno, for those of you who don't speak English, complaint of caregivers according to one group. And that is, you know what that is, Adrian?
The lack of privacy.
Who would have known? The lack of privacy.
I would never have thought that was the first.
Me neither.
I really wouldn't.
Me neither. And as far as my own privacy, being a caregiver, I mean, I have to think back 22 years ago. Privacy. I don't know. How about you?
See, I could say, you know, it was the lack of time for myself, but not a lack of privacy. If I wanted,
I would say that too.
I mean, if I wanted privacy, I'd find a way to get privacy, but I'd close the door to my office, you know. But I think it was finding that time for me away from the two people that I was taking care of. So if that's lack of privacy, okay. But that's my way of looking at it.
I'm going to pause right now, Adrian, because I'm looking. Oh, there it is. Okay, I just wanted to make sure we were actually broadcasting on Facebook Live, and apparently we are. Mm. So that's cool. I don't have to worry about that. So, all right, well, let's talk about, since neither of us are experts in complaining about lack of privacy, let's talk about what we can complain about, and that was the lack of having time alone for myself, for yourself. And you go first.
Well, I had to learn how to set boundaries and make sure that I was heard when I said that I need to do this, needing emotionally to do it, to refresh myself, to take some time for myself, to do whatever it was that I wanted to do. Shopping, or I mean, even just going for groceries, you know, it was time away from the two people that I was caring for, which was time for me to just clear my head, and they had to get used to it, had to get used to the fact that I was not going to be in the house 24/7 every single day of, you know, every single day of the year.
Yes. And I have a message that Helen Frazier is watching on Facebook
good.
Live. So Helen,
great.
She's at the hospital with her mom with blood clots in her leg. And so, you know, she's doing what we all do. But if you can get away, you probably can't call from the hospital, Helen, because but if you can, give us a call. So, yeah,
I'm
I can totally relate. Yeah.
Huh?
Well, we can relate to what you just said. I can, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, about me, you know, I hardly remember 22 years ago, but I remember there was a time that, oh, and Lynn Barrington is watching also. Hi, Lynn.
Wow.
Wow, this is cool. This is really our first Facebook Live. We're really paying attention to what's happening on Facebook Live. So the question, in case you just tuned in, the five biggest complaints caregivers make, and we're both surprised because the number one complaint apparently is lack of, what was it? Lack of
privacy.
And maybe that can be interpreted as lack of having time alone to yourself, because I don't think I had. When I think of lack of privacy, I think of I've got to go in the bathroom and lock the door to get some privacy, you know,
right,
to think or to read a book or to talk on the phone. But I don't think that was the case with me. But I do remember there was a time when I needed a break from my loved one. I needed to get away because it was just day after day, minute after minute, second after second. And I just had to schedule an unplanned, spontaneous trip to Nashville and visit some relatives out there and tell my wife that I had to go somewhere. And I brought someone in to watch her. I didn't tell her where I was going because she would be jealous and she would start an argument. We'd have, you know, just, I didn't want to go there. And it's that old definition of what is a lie. Well, the truth, you know, tell all of it, the whole truth, don't leave any of it out, and nothing but the truth, don't add any lies to it. I'm guilty of all three in those days, and I'm not condoning that. I'm just telling you what a desperate Dave had to resort to just to get some time alone to himself. And I had an amazing time, because when can you just go visit relatives you haven't seen in years or decades, right? We never have time to do that.
You just got on a plane and went.
I just got on a plane and went. I don't even remember what I paid for the ticket. Didn't matter how much it cost. I just left. I brought someone in to watch my wife, and as far as she knew, I was working late shifts at the gas station. I don't know what I told her. But apparently it worked until she found out, and then she got very upset.
I'm sure.
And I had to do that a few times the next time. And I would come back refreshed and rejuvenated. And I could,
absolutely.
You know, my cup was full and I was a much better caregiver until it was depleted again. Then I planned a trip to New York and I did the same thing. I didn't tell her again because she would just, you know, freak out. And I came back refreshed. And then the next time I planned a trip to Florida, got relatives all over the place. And so that's how I handled it. So can you think of any more stories or should we move on to the next one?
Well, I just want to say when I had my knee surgery in December and Eddie, my boyfriend, had come in from California to be with me, and I had warned him ahead of time, you know, that this was going to take, being a caregiver is going to take a lot of patience, and it really is overwhelming. So he was forewarned, and after about 10 days, he was finally able to see his way. He felt secure enough to leave me to go and have a massage and take some time for himself. He came home, he was another person.
Really?
He was so much lighter. It doesn't have to be a trip. You know, it can be an hour away. It can be, you know, that's you could just go out to lunch with a friend and that's time for yourself where you're not concerned with the other people that, you know, are usually your primary focus.
Right.
It was interesting to call to his attention. Look at you, you know, so much love. An hour massage and made such a difference.
Yeah, or it can be a one-hour Calgon moment. Calgon, take me away, you know.
Absolutely.
Where you really do lock the bathroom door, you know.
Yeah. Or you have to claim that time for yourself.
Or it could be a manicure or a pedicure or both. Or a massage or
a walk around the block.
Or a walk around the block. So, all right, I think we got that one covered. What's the second one?
Sleep deprivation.
Oh, that's a biggie. I'm no good when I don't get 8 hours sleep. I need not 7.5. I need 8. And if I don't get it, I got to make it up the next day. I know there's some crazy people out there. You can never make up sleep. Once it's lost forever.
Lost.
That is not true. Because I can make it up. I can sleep 14 hours to make up a bad week, and I feel great. So whoever said that doesn't know what they're talking about. Do you have any sleep stories?
I did not have sleep issues until late into, because both of the people I was taking care of had cancer, and as their disease progressed, and I really had to start listening for whether or not something was wrong, whether, you know, what was going on, if someone was up in the middle of the night walking around, you know, it's not like I was dealing with someone with Alzheimer's or dementia, or someone who needed care in the middle of the night. Sometimes you have to get up in the middle of the night to administer different things, make sure you turn someone over or, you know, that kind of thing. But I never had that problem really until the end.
Hey, do me a favor, Adrian. Helen is asking for the code, and for some reason I did not get a code when I emailed myself. What is the code, the meeting ID, so she can call in?
I will.
You'll have to look at your email.
Get the code.
And another thing about sleep deprivation.
Do I want the meeting ID?
Meeting ID, yeah.
184.
Let me write it down. 184. Anyone who wants to call in, you need this ID number. 184.
388.
388.
297.
297. Got that? 184. Write it down. 388-297. So I'll try to write that on the Facebook page as well. So say something while I'm doing that, Adrian.
So, you have the phone in, the dial-in numbers
and
all that? Yeah,
the phone number's there. I just didn't put the meeting code.
Okay, and you don't need the room system number?
I don't think so.
Okay, if you do, I got it up on the screen. I'll just go get it.
Okay. How many hours do you need of sleep? There are people out there. I mean, the average caregiver gets 2 to 3 hours sleep. I can't survive on 2 or 3 hours, and obviously they can't either because 30% of them die and 60% get sicker than the one they're caring for, eventually needing a caregiver of their own. But there are people out there who can survive on 4 hours. I've met them. They've been doing it all their life. I don't know how.
I did for years. I was like that. And not just because I was a night owl. I was a workaholic. I would have deadlines that I had to meet. I'd work until 2 o'clock in the morning and then go home and then have to wake up at 6 or 7 and I would be able to function. I sort of thrived on pressure. but now,
Now that we're older,
hours.
You mean?
Now that I'm older,
that's
I need 8 hours.
That's what you mean
hours.
By now?
Now that I'm older, I do need the 8 hours. If I don't get it, I can function. But sometimes I'm a little groggy during the day and need a nap. And naps are good.
Naps are good. Sometimes you wake up a little groggy from the nap, though.
But sometimes you're very refreshed.
Yes. Now, I posted the meeting ID number in the post, so you should have it now at 184-388-297. So I'm surprised she's able to call from the hospital. Usually, I
cell
never...
phones.
Well, no. Whenever I'm in a hospital, I got no signal.
I did.
And then some hospitals, they complain that, no, you can't use the cell phone because it interferes with the heart
telemetry.
Monitor or something, you know. I still don't know why airline pilots can't fly their plane while we're making cell phone calls. What is that all about? This is like...
Yeah, I know.
You know, and why the tray table has to be up and why the seat has to be back. You know, why?
Well, I think, well, that's for your safety, but the telephone... I don't see that the telephones would. Maybe if everybody was on the phone, it would screw up the, you know, the readings. But I see so many people doing it anyway.
One of them, but don't tell anybody.
Do you want to know what the third one is?
Yes, we're moving through these pretty fast. What is the third one? So before you say that, what were the hours that you said today you need?
Eight.
Okay, so you and I are alike.
I function well now with 8 hours.
And do you have any trouble getting your 8 hours? You have insomnia like my wife does. She needs sleeping pills and all that.
No, I don't. And if I get 9 hours or 10 hours, I might wake up with a headache.
Really?
So it's like the 8 hours is a healthy thing.
Well,
sometimes if you sleep too much, if you're
right, you
somebody
up,
who gets
like
migraines, it'll do that. By the way, your picture just disappeared.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I have no control over that. Has something to do with the internet, I'm sure.
I don't know,
did
but
that
it
the
says
last couple
that you're
of weeks.
Talking.
Yeah.
So,
we won't
there
worry
you
about
are.
It. Yeah?
You're back.
All right, well, whatever. I'll come and go. But we have to remember there are other people who are sleep deprived. So what advice can we give them? How, if somebody is getting those 2 and 3 hours sleep because, you know, every time they go to sleep, their loved one interrupts their sleep. Hello, I need water. Please give me water. 3 o'clock in the morning. Or I need to go to the bathroom or whatever.
And
are
it's
there things
not,
we can do?
It's not like setting boundaries is really going to change that. because a need is a need.
And well, if they're hungry,
unless there's somebody
or
there
thirsty, the boundaries could work.
Well, I mean, you can have, depending on what somebody's condition is, you could have a pitcher of water or a glass of water or a bottle of water next to the bed. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is capable of doing that.
Or maybe a diaper.
Or a diaper. Or
get through the night. If it means getting your 8 hours sleep and your loved one wearing a diaper, even if they do not want to wear a diaper, because, you know, there's some stubborn elderly people. I am not wearing a diaper. I'm not a child, you know. But I'm telling you, if it means me getting my sleep or them swallowing their pride and putting on a diaper, guess who's going to win?
Well,
I value my sleep.
That's a boundary.
Yeah.
That's a boundary, but not everybody has that issue. That's a boundary issue.
Yeah.
That could be dealt with. Yes.
Yeah. The people who don't like confrontation, you know, I'm sorry, but you're just going to have to learn.
Yes.
Confrontation can be a caregiver's best friend. I don't mean, you know, starting a big old knockdown, drag out fight, but saying things like, I will be taking care of me from the hours of 1:30 p.m. till 3. Please don't disturb me unless it is a dire emergency. Let me define what dire emergency is. Someone is going to die or become severely disabled.
Only a life and death issue once.
And so they will test that. The next day they'll ring their little bell at 2 o'clock. And you can either ignore it or go.
Hi, Dave.
Oh, here's Helen joining us on the phone.
Caller.
That's where I gave her work. Hello, Helen. We were just
finishing
a thought here about what to do when your loved one doesn't honor the boundaries. You know, it's like children. You tell children, don't do this, go, don't play in the street, don't touch the stove. They're going to test it.
Right.
And when they do test it, it's your response. Hey, remember we had this conversation? Remember, from 1:30 to 3 is me time, unless it's a dire emergency, life or death. And so I will give you your water this time, but it will not happen again. And so, of course, tomorrow it will happen again. And you say, and you can scream from the other room, sorry, or whatever.
I've done that.
Whatever works for you.
I've done that.
You want to say something?
Do you have boundary issues?
I have a lot of issues. I have a lot of issues. I mean, she's 74. She's a stroke victim. And she just had a biopsy done. And there's a lot of health issues and stuff like that. But she's got her days and nights mixed up. She likes to stay up at night. I have to sleep at night in order to go to work in the morning.
Ah.
So I'm not sleeping.
My mother had that problem, but she had dementia.
She don't have dementia or anything like that. She's got everything messed up.
So she's not typically in the hospital, right? This is just unusual?
Well, it's off and on. Off and on.
So how would you come up with your five top complaints? Let's see what your list looks like if it compares with our list.
Oh. my biggest top one, me time.
Me time, that's what I would say,
Me time.
I don't get time for a lot of friends where I ask me to go out to dinner, let's go here, let's go to... I can't.
Right. Well, did you hear what we were saying about that? Did any of our suggestions give you any ideas?
The make time and stuff?
Yeah, the make time.
It's kind of hard because, like I was talking to you, is my sister moved down in 2015 to help me with my mother, and now she's in a dilemma where her husband, who just had been diagnosed with AML, is a leukemia, and he just had a stroke last night.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
And he's only 59 years old.
How old
is
he?
But he's young.
How old?
59.
Yeah, that is young.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
how old was
he's
Charlene?
Now with...
Charlene was 52, even younger.
Yeah. So
what can we tell her about me time with her specific situation of being direly desperate?
I have told my mom before, I said, look, from this time to this time, can you give me time at least? Can I go get in a tub and soak?
What'd she say?
She said, well, when I'm in there, I hear her screaming. It's like, oh my gosh. Mommy, I don't even have my me time.
So does she forget that that's your me time?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then, you know, leave her a note. Say, Mom, in case you forgot, this is my me time until 2 o'clock. Here's the clock. When the big hand is on the 12 and the little hand is on the 2, I will come out of my tub.
TSC and problem.
She's just testing the system. So you've got to be strong. You've got to, you know, not be afraid of confrontation. Mm-hmm. And have an argument if you have to. If you have to have an argument,
well,
have that argument.
The thing is, the other day, she says, I can't believe you had the most impeccable manners. I now look at you and I'm thinking to myself.
Guilt.
My hair out for her saying it.
That's called guilt. Yeah. Just ignore all guilt.
Yeah.
Because that kind of guilt is undeserved. You know, there's two kinds of guilt. There's deserved guilt and undeserved guilt. And if you're not sure which one is which, ask a trusted friend. Say, hey, here's what happened. Should I feel guilty about this? Absolutely not. Blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And then it's got to roll off of your back like water on a duck. You know, I liken guilt.
It's just been one thing after another. I just got over having a hemorrhaging from my nose and had major surgery on it.
Wow.
In the process caregivers of my mom caregivers.
Well, I my health, the problem is I keep telling her, if I don't have my health, I can't give you anything.
Right.
Exactly.
How does she respond to remarks like that?
There's nothing, no response.
No response. I would say, Mom, did you hear what I just said? When there's no response, I would repeat it. Say, Mom, did you hear what I just said? Let me say it again. Blah, 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 blah. How do you respond to that, Mom? Force a response out of her. Say, do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, I do get response out of her, but they're very sarcastic response. It's her attention is her attention only.
Yeah.
There is nothing around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. These are mother-daughter issues, and these were going on before her disability. And these are things that you've got to be a big girl, put on your big girl pants, and you got to be strong. And I know it's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would do it. Adrian, you're a woman. Any advice? You've had some mother-daughter issues.
I read my mother the Riot Act, basically, and told her, you know, if you ever do this again or if you ever do that again, whatever it was.
My mother would say, don't ever threaten me again.
Do not make idle threats. I will tell you.
No, she's made idle threats to us.
Well, you got to call her bluff because you're holding all the aces.
You should not make idle threats. So.
Oh, I don't. I looked at her. I said, you have two choices. It's either you're going to follow what we need to help you or somebody's going to make a choice that you may not like.
Right.
Say, there are lots of nursing homes out there. You may not like it, but if we can't make this work, Mom, that's where you're going. Okay? And you got to hold that over her head.
That's what my sister said that this morning.
I was going to ask you, if you have the means to have someone come in and, you know, and help, or she's fairly young.
I'm trying to figure out how to get like department agent here in Maryland to come on board. But my one doctor suggested just even last week when we were talking to him, when she was at the doctor's, that maybe she needs, because of walking disability and trying to find out, she has blood clots in her one leg, but it's not enough to break loose and go to heart and everything else. It's way below, so they got her on heparin. But the thing is that she doesn't want to exercise or anything, and as much as we tell her, let's go get up, let's walk, she's very defiant. So now they're suggesting maybe we do in-house therapy where she goes to rehab for a couple of months.
I think that's very sensible.
Right, and that's what we were in the process of trying to work out, but then she ended up in here finding out she has a blood clot. But she just had a lung biopsy because of they found something on a PET scan, but I had her quit smoking for a year or so, and she decided to go out with some friends, and they were smoking, and she started smoking again. And when you try to take her cigarette away, she got nasty. So she's a spicy one.
She has the freedom and mobility to do that? Go out with friends? How much care does she require?
Well, she wears her pull-ups and everything. She needs to just get dressed and everything in the mornings and stuff. And her friend, who's 85 years old, who helps, drives and everything, and I got her out in the car and everything. She helped to get her out of the car. They went to lunch and came back, but she noticed her. She's gone downhill. She says, what's going on? And I said, I don't know. Doctors are involved.
She's going downhill probably because she's not doing the physical stuff that she needs to do to progress.
Yeah. This goes into a different subject about the loved one being defiant and stubborn and not following orders and doing things that, you know, you can't want her to get better more than she wants to get better. And what do we do, Adrian, about people, loved ones who just don't care? You know, they don't care if they die. They don't care. They figure they're old enough. They lived a life. They want a quality life. They want to drink. They want to smoke. They want to do all sorts of things that drives us crazy. What do we do about that?
Well, I know with my mother, you know, even just going out on the porch was just too much. It would make her too tired. She couldn't be bothered.
That's what's happening to me right now is we have a front porch where, you know, she has a rocker. She used to love to go out there, and now I just can't even get out on the front porch to rock.
Mm-hmm.
She's at the point she don't care. She wants to be left alone. She's told us she's tired. She wants to be left alone. She wants to die.
Well, maybe it's time for a facility.
It sounds like she does need some supervision.
She needs activities. She needs a community. Yeah. She needs 24/7 attention and, you know, look into the way of paying it. You know, if her husband was a veteran, VA will kick in some money if she's capable of getting...
He worked for the railroad. My dad worked for the railroad.
But he was never in the service?
No.
Was he in the union?
Yeah. Did he have a nice pension?
She has a pension and everything from him, yes.
She gets Social Security because they'll take the check in payment of assisted living. And now, you're in California?
Maryland.
Maryland.
Maryland. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about Maryland.
Delaware.
Or Delaware. Same thing, right?
My daughter lives in Delaware.
I've been approved for a TEDx talk, and I think it's in Wilmington, and she said that was in Delaware, right?
Oh, I know where that is, Delaware,
Yep.
Well, maybe you can come out when it happens. So I think it's time to look into a facility. I do.
I think as our next step here is once we get the doctors and all on board here to talk, because they do have a place that I did have her at. She decided to sign herself out.
Well,
one independent broad.
She decided to sign herself out. And then what did you do?
I did nothing. She called herself a cab and came to the house.
And
She's strong-willed. She was involved with the county politics and government, and she was the president of the nonprofit organization for 28 years. She knows her stuff, what her rights are, and that's why she throws it at me in my sister's face.
So what is her disability? What is her problem?
She is type 2 diabetic. She has heart. She's an epileptic and a stroke victim, and she has an aneurysm, an aorta stomach aneurysm.
Is she aware of all this stuff?
Oh, yeah, she'll tell you.
She's ready to die.
And everything. But she says she's tired. She's ready to die.
How old is she?
But then she'll sit back.
74.
74.
That's young to die, but I guess, you know.
Yeah.
If you're in that bad of shape, I can see. I can relate.
Yeah. But then she'll sit back and say, I can't wait to see my daughter's due in 2 months, and her other grandson's due, his wife's due in 4 months. So she can't wait to see the great-grandkids. It's like, okay, one minute you're telling me this, the thing you want to wait. So it's sound of mind, I guess, how she is one day and to the next day, how she feels.
Yeah, it's like the carrot, you know, the carrot and the horse. You have to figure out what it is that's going to motivate her. Or find someone who can motivate her, because I think she knows that you're going to be there for her.
Yeah, she needs to call.
She tests you.
She's testing.
Yeah, but you
me
need
constantly.
To start being strong. You need to start saying no.
Right.
And if you don't know how to say no, then look in the mirror and practice saying no 100 different ways. No. No.
And you know what? A lot of my friends keep saying that to me. Saying your problem is that you take care of too many people and you don't know how to say no to people.
Yeah.
Because I do take care of my boyfriend, 18 years, will be 19. He's incomplete quadriplegic. I got him walking now. He's with a cane and stuff, but he still needs help getting to the grocery stores, the lawn and stuff like that. I go up there in between taking care of my mother. and working full time.
Sounds like he's easier to care for than your mother.
Yeah.
He is. Yeah. He's very independent to get on his boat, and he does exercise. He does exactly what the doctors tell him to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mom is the opposite.
Your mother's like a drug addict. You know, you cannot want the loved one to get off drugs if the loved one does not want to get off drugs. You know, I'm talking
right.
about, I'm just making a comparison.
I can take you into that. I can take you that point because my brother at age 45 passed away, and he was a heroin addict.
Yeah, and there was mm-hmm. nothing you could have done about it, right?
No, and as much as my mom tried to help, but mom also gave in to him, too. So that's her baby boy.
You need to make some shocking statements to your mother. Say, you know what? You remind me of my brother.
Because he was on drugs.
And what'd she say?
I did last night. I went there last night, and I never would have done it, but I finally got to the breaking point.
Yeah.
And I said, that's it. I said, you are just exactly like what Billy has done to everybody else. I said, and I told her, there you will not do that to me. I said,
You need to make some ultimatums that you are prepared to mm-hmm. follow through.
Okay,
you're not going
to
make idle
on,
threats. You're going to say, Mom, if you don't do this and that, then I will be leaving and I won't be answering your phone calls. And I will mm-hmm. make sure that there's a nice nursing home that will care for you. And you can ring your little buzzer and they can come and 24/7 take care of all of your needs. But I'm not going to sacrifice mm-hmm. my life for your life because you're like a drug addict.
Right.
You're like my brother who's on a path of suicide, and I'm not going to go there with you. You want to commit suicide? Do it by yourself. You know, a lot of people can't.
I did that last night.
But you
well,
don't
I'm glad.
Want to say things like that.
Did she recognize that?
I'm not sure because they have her, you know, come into the hospital this morning and everything and what they've been doing with her all day. I don't think she's recognized it, but I think over a couple of days when I sit down and have a chat with her, I will probably
be a different
person. Chat with her.
You got to talk. Forget about, you know, trying not to offend her because that's impossible. You need to sound like a different person where she says, oh, my God, where's my daughter? She's not here. I said, Mom, I'm a new person. Your daughter's gone.
Right.
Your daughter was following you to the grave, and that's not going to happen
mm-hmm.
because I value my life too much. I know you don't value your life, but I value. This is the kind of language you have to use with these people.
I like reverse psychology and stuff.
Whatever you want to call it.
Right, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I
your life for her
I
life.
It,
someone's going to die.
Tips and stuff. Yeah. I think the biggest thing is I'm going to have to say that to her. You know, who else is going to be here to take care of you? You keep running me to the ground.
Well,
I'd rather voluntarily quit while I'm still alive and healthy mm-hmm. than to have you kill me, and then I'm out of options.
Right.
And then you're going into a nursing home anyway.
And you see, and the other thing is, it seems to me that she has trouble taking orders and listening to you and your advice, no matter how sound it may be. It mm-hmm. seems like, you know, if it comes from somebody else who's a higher authority, mm-hmm. they're going to, you know, if she is in a residence where she's, you know, it's a facility to get her up and doing stuff again.
That's what I'm trying to figure out now is to see where our next step.
They'll be going in there and they will get her and they will make her do whatever it is.
Well, they'll force her. They're going to force her
to herself right now.
Yeah.
They'll force her up and about.
Yeah.
And she may be more comfortable around her age group where if they're out in the dark, you know, when they're out in the community and stuff like that, she may feel better with that way, making friends instead of sitting in a bedroom all the time or on the front porch sometimes.
Excited like hell, but then once she gets there, she says, this ain't so bad.
Right, it's not so bad.
Yeah. All right, so we just solved all your problems.
Yeah, I hope it goes that way. I hope it goes that way.
I'll send you a bill.
And I appreciate it. Okay, you do that.
Let us know next week if anything, you know, what worked out and what didn't. I will.
I'll get in touch with Dave and everything. He'll pass everything on, but I'm on my way. They're taking her upstairs to a room because she's been down here since 6 o'clock this morning.
Well, glad we could help.
But I will. I'll Well, I hope so.
And I hope we helped 100 other people who were listening with the same problem.
I hope so, too. I mean, only one person can do so much, but you have to, like you said, you have to learn to say no sometimes and think for yourself.
Just practice saying no in the mirror. That way it'll come out real. And smile when you say it. Say no. What part of no don't you understand?
Yeah.
No.
What part of no don't you understand?
My wife says no amazingly. She'll say, no. I'll count the no's. And like if there's 9 no's, I know that she's really serious. 5 or below, iffy.
I'm getting ready to get on the elevator. I may lose you.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thanks.
Well, this would be a good time for a break, don't you think?
Yeah.
Okay, so we will be right back. Please don't go away because there's so much more coming up.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. Available everywhere.
Back with Adrian Gruberg and Dave Nassani. And hopefully everybody can hear me. I'm not muted or anything.
No, you're fine.
So that was great. That was a great
nice
guest.
Nice getting a call and being able to.
I think there'll be a lot more of that. Thank you, Facebook Live.
Mm-hmm.
So what is number 3? I think, did we get up to number 3 yet?
Number 3 was the Lone Soldier.
Isolation, right?
Just isolation. But I take it to mean sometimes there are siblings, but it falls to one of the two siblings that don't get help from the rest of their family.
Yeah, for example, if you're in the Army, you have a bunch of soldiers on your team.
Right.
And if you were just a lone soldier, you're just a sitting target. They know who to shoot at, and you're going down. So, yeah, you feel like you're all alone, like nobody's feeling what you're feeling. You don't want to ask for help because everyone has their own life, and you don't want to intrude. And you don't
at
feel
what they've
obligated.
Told you that they're not going to help.
Oh, yeah, they've, with siblings, yes. Oh,
yes.
I can't, I'm too far away. Oh, your mom's favorite. You know, she doesn't like me very much, and so you're the one, and what do we do with those kinds of people? There's nothing we can do with the siblings, right? Can't make them feel guilty because they are guiltless.
Yeah, I mean, my brother-in-law.
We get money out of them so that we can hire help.
Well, my brother-in-law lived in Houston, and he would come in for 3 days occasionally, maybe 2 or 3 times a year, which, you know, when you're the person that's on call every single day, three days here and there doesn't cut it.
Right.
But
and he thinks he's doing the world for you.
Yeah. It was actually 2 years of my taking care of Sylvia before he came here for a week so Steve and I could take our last vacation, you know, for a week.
Yeah. My mother-in-law was like that.
Yeah, it's tough. But there, the people who are lone soldiers, there's a way of, there's an organization called Share the Care. Are you?
Yeah.
And there's a book that they print that tells you how to gather the people that you know, around you.
Yeah.
And get them to help you,
There's a way, there's a strategy.
There's a strategy. you get these people and you, this one will say, okay, I can sit for like an hour on Tuesdays so that you can get away. Somebody else can pick up the kids from school. Somebody else can get the groceries. You know, I mean, it can really help. And I've hosted a couple of them. The organization is called Share the Care, and
there's a book.
That's the book.
We should do a show on that one time.
Sheila's.
You know her?
Yeah.
We'll have her on the show. Invite her.
I'll invite her.
Invite
okay.
her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it takes strategizing,
I thought you were going to say it takes a village to be a caregiver.
Well, it takes strategizing to create that village. How to pull those people together? People that you don't think of will actually turn up and be there for you. It's interesting.
Well, I'll look forward to you having her on the show. Thank you.
Yeah.
So what's number four?
Number four is anticipating the unknown or the future. You know, if really not knowing what's coming next.
I sure didn't know what was coming. But now I know that there are ways to have found out what was coming, but I was just clueless. Most caregivers are clueless. And so I guess the only way around that is to do your homework and find out, you know, what are the symptoms of a stroke or what are the symptoms of post-traumatic stress syndrome or whatever your particular type of cancer, whatever it is.
Right.
Do your homework and
do your homework,
be ahead of the curve.
Find support groups with people in it who have the experience that you need to learn from.
There are so many support groups, hundreds and hundreds. And not that they're all doing the same thing. Many of them are just in a little niche. You know, it's like being a doctor, what your specialty is, et cetera. You've got like 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 specialty groups, right?
And growing.
Spousal support, you've got
after caregiving, cancer. I mean, there are so many, and youth, the youth group is a big group.
Because there are
a lot of young caregivers.
1.6 million.
And they're really ignored.
Are they actually tuning into your group, these kids?
Oh, yes. Corey is really...
Those are mature kids.
Yes, they are.
Going on a support group.
They're carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders. And they are to be praised and honored and much more. It's tough. Their childhood, basically, is being infringed upon.
So caregiver support groups is a biggie. What other resources are out there to help us to know what's coming? Because it's like a caregiver tsunami, you know. It's like we can't see the wave yet, but we know it's coming.
Well, I mean, I was told when Steve was diagnosed with lung cancer, we knew that he would be all right after surgery for a certain amount of time, but this was going to kill him. It would recur, and it would eventually kill him. And when you live with that over your head, at least you know what the future is. You think you're prepared, but it's never what you expect. It's always different. So there's really no way to prepare completely for the unknown.
Oh.
But
when you heard those words from the doctor, this is going to kill him.
Yeah.
What was your reaction? Were you shocked? Were you numb? Were you in denial?
My life changed immediately.
You immediately received it. Those words came in and you were reacting.
Yeah. The thing was, Steve was in a coma, an induced coma, when the surgeon came in to tell me that they had discovered cancer, and I had to keep it to myself until the doctor could tell him. I didn't feel it was my place to tell him. So I walked around knowing it for about 3 weeks, and before the doctor was able to tell him. And that was very tough, carrying that burden and knowing it, being the brave soldier. But I didn't want the news to come from me. Steve never knew that I knew for any time.
How were you during those 3 weeks? Were you, you know, there's things called anticipatory grief.
I started grieving from the minute we got the diagnosis. I had anticipatory grief because I was grieving for the life that had changed immediately. I was grieving for what might happen, you know, in the near future and in the distant future. There are sort of stages of anticipatory grief.
Are they the same stages that we hear about, you know, the denial and the bargaining and the anger and the depression and then acceptance? How was it different?
Well, I accepted it immediately, but that didn't mean that I wasn't going to be depressed or angry. The acceptance was immediate.
Where was your anger?
There was no bargaining.
Where was your anger targeted at?
Well, the anger was, you know, he didn't deserve this. You know, it's not just why me, it was why us, you know. I will say, I'm doing writing now where I just keep saying, you know, we did this and we did that. You know, we went to Boston to have surgery, and he was the one who had the surgery. But we certainly went through that whole experience together. It's so shared,
yeah,
that you do feel like you're a part of it. That's the only way I can explain it. I mean, your life has changed. Your
yeah.
life has changed completely, and. So you get to a new normal,
mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that there's no one to be angry at. So the anger turns into depression because depression's right. anger turned inwards.
Well, what's number five? Do you remember what time we started the show?
No.
I think we're coming up on it.
Uh-huh. Overwhelming. Care tasks, people being overwhelmed.
Well, that's a biggie. That falls into a big category.
Yeah.
It seems like caregivers are always overwhelmed about something.
Yeah. I mean, Helen
yeah.
was a good example of that. There were just so many things that had
so
to be
So many perfect
considered.
Storms that this happened, and then that happened, and then that happened.
Right.
And then my sister, you know, just
and she has to go to work, you know. And now she has
it.
To confront her mother and sit and tell her.
It's no wonder that stress kills a third of caregivers.
Yep.
And suicide takes a lot of caregivers.
Oh, yeah.
And then sickness and diseases take caregivers. It's just no wonder. They are the most in danger people group I could think of. I mean, there might be another group, but right now I'm so close to caregivers that's all I can see is...
Right.
And you know, they're getting... I think we spoke last week about our guest who had it all together with organizing and getting the word out, and, you know, opening the NASDAQ stock exchange, ringing the bell or whatever it is she did. And caregivers are like, they haven't even got to first base yet as far as getting the word out, getting... national attention, getting funding from private groups
you know what I've said. It's because
yeah.
nobody speaks up. Everybody just keeps their mouths shut and does what they think is expected of
yeah.
them. and behaves themselves, and they don't make noise.
We've had some leaders like Joan London and Rosalind Carter have spoken out, but not
enough. Rosalind Carter, one would have expected Rosalind Carter to be heard more because she was a person.
And even Nancy Reagan, before she died, obviously, but she was vocal, but I guess there's always more you can do.
But that was Alzheimer's specific more than caregiver specific.
Yeah,
and,
true.
And
Alzheimer's Association's
problem.
Doing pretty good as far as
absolutely.
Funding and stuff.
And that's because baby boomers are putting money into it.
Yeah. And I heard an interesting statistic. You know, everyone knows that the baby boomers were the largest segment of society. And I always thought that they were the largest and there was not another to replace them. But I just heard that the millennials are larger than the baby boomers. And I asked the person who told me that, how can that be? I was in Hawaii. This guy from Washington, D.C., he was talking on aging. He's an expert. And he says, well, in the 80s, we were being prosperous and the economy was doing great. The stock market was doing great. Everyone was making a lot of money in the 80s. And one of the signs of success is getting married, having children. But I had no idea that they had more children than the baby boomers when they came home from the war.
I'm surprised. Yeah. Oh,
so you didn't know either.
No.
Yeah. So now you've got this big problem. You've got the baby boomers who are requiring care, and you got the millennials who are starting to realize that there's a problem. So
it's the sandwich generation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, something's got to happen or we're all going to be in trouble.
Yes, yeah, well, something's got to happen.
I'm not sure, but I think we're out of time. But why don't you tell us how we can get a hold of Adrian Gruberg in the caregiver space?
Adrian Gruberg is Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org. And the website's thecaregiverspace.org. And all of the other information you need, you can find there.
Very good. Oh, I saw his clock at the top, 57 minutes and 26. I'm right on target here.
Right on target.
So, and my contact information is caregiverdave.com. And that's all you really need to know because I'm a caregiver. I'm Dave. You go to caregiverdave.com. It's all there. It's a membership website. We have, if you join our membership website, you have access to 100% of all our content, all our videos, Dave's 5 minutes of Dave's hammock wisdom. You've got all the radio shows, all the podcasts, all the blogs, just all of it. And you get a 60-minute coaching session with yours truly, Dave. Now, that right there is priceless. It's worth the price of admission and everything else. And yes. Okay. Well, that's all I'll say. As Forrest Gump would say, well, that's all I'll say about that. So everyone, and now I can say Facebook people, we will be here every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific and 4 p.m. Eastern. And all you Central people, you know what your time is in between there. Unless something happens, like Adrian was a little late to the coming back from the doctor, and the United Nations was causing her to be late. So
rain.
We started 30 minutes late. But other than that, look for us on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver page on Facebook. And that's all. So we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program with Dave Nassani.